tree, such a treat as a newcomer to town. It's a year and a half already. I can't really believe it's gone. It's been so long, but I'm constantly discovering new elements of this wonderful community that we live in. And this gathering and this series is just another one. Another one, a feather in our community's hat, and a credit to YU and to all of you for coming. And really, it's a pleasure and a treat to be here. I mentioned as well that today's learning is sponsored as an aliyah for the neshama of Avram ben Yitzchak Travis Alav HaShalom, whose second year that is today. May his neshama have an aliyah from our learning. Okay, so quick show of hands. How many of you have ever sat through a shiur or a class on Shabbos before? Right, I mean, there's no way you can't not have ever done so. So the majority of which I would guess, you can tell me if I'm wrong, I would guess would have been on Hilcha Shabbos, on the laws of Shabbos. The laws of Shabbos are complex. They are numerous. They are significant. They are ever-changing in the technological and modern world in which we live. So even if you mastered everything in seminary, within 10 years, whatever you learned, you gotta keep up as to, okay, maybe making tea doesn't change so much, but like everything else in our kitchens and in our lives. So we're constantly addressing that. I would guess 80 to 90% of the time spent on learning about Shabbos is learning about Hilchos Shabbos and the laws. How much is spent on the hashkafa, on the meaning, on the value of Shabbos? I would say far less. I'm just guessing, just on my own experiences. Maybe a drasha and shul every once in a while, or something like that. But a six-week class, a series, I know I've never had the chance to teach. I've never sat through something like that. In such an intense, so to speak, focused way. And what I'd like to do is something which is unique for me as far as preparing, and I'm sure it's been done before, but actually take a look at, starting from the Psukim, a series of places where the Torah talks about Shabbos, look at them in depth, one at a time, go through all of them, and sort of overlay that with what Chazal have to tell us about Shabbos, because there are many, many statements in the Gemara and in the Midrashim, and the Midrashim paint a different picture than the Gemara, than the Psukim themselves. But taking a look at studying, we have 6 weeks together, actually looking into the various places where we learn about Shabbos and how we learn about Shabbos, contrast it and compare it with how Chazal describe it, and really give us the beauty of the gift of Shabbos. That's the plan, and we'll sort of take it through. Ready to go? Okay. All right, let's do it. What I wanted to start with was a statement in the Gemara, and I highlighted it in source your first source. There's the longer piece of the Gemara, and then the one line that I want to start with. So I put the one line that I want to start with on top, and then we'll learn the entire context. The one line goes as follows: Omer lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Matana Tova Yesh Li Beveis Ginzi UShabbos Shma. I have a Matana Tova. I have a great gift, and I would like to give it to the Jewish people. Excuse me, I actually didn't read that yet. Matana Tova in my Beis Ginzi is in my treasure house. UShabbos Shma. Its name is Shabbos. Vani mevakesh litznot liYisrael. I want to give it to the Jewish people. Lech v'hodiam. So go and let them know about this wonderful gift that I have. Okay, before we even get into the actual context of the Gemara, what are the couple salient points that come out of such a statement? What jumps out at you? It's a presence. Okay, what's the significance of calling it a presence? If I would have started and I would have said, how should we identify Shabbos? What words would you use, Hebrew, Jewish, rabbinic words, to describe Shabbos? No, before you saw this Gemara.
A day of rest.
A day of rest. What's the most basic way you would have described it?
Commandments.
It's a mitzvah. It's one of the 613. It has a lot of components to it. It's two out of the 613 if you want to include Zachor and Shamor. Maybe it's two. It's in the Aseres HaDibros. In the most basic way, if I wanted to define what is Shabbos, it's a mitzvah. Okay, what else? It's day of rest. Whatever else we would have come up with. We would have come up with other things. Chazal describe it as a matana. How many other mitzvos do you know Does the Torah, does the Gemara, do Chazal, putting words into Hashem's mouth, describe, I have a great gift I want to give you. It's called Basar B'Chalav. You're never going to eat it and you're going to thank me later. It's a beautiful present. Where do we have a language of this mitzvah, a command, but I want to describe it as a matana? Okay, that's salient point number one that comes out of such a statement. What else from the statement? Something very else, very important.
He's asking, Mivakesh.
Okay, I want to give it. True. In other words, Hashem says, I have this great gift, and I want to give it. Which, just the whole imagery of that. How do we, again, when we have ideas of tzitzis and shatnez, and shofar, is there the sense of Hashem's desire? I really want to give him shatnez. I'm a vakesh. No, we don't have that. What else? There's something really important in this line.
It's been given just to Israel.
Okay, it's been given just to us. We're going to see in a halacha that a non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos. We'll get to that later on in our series. This unique aspect of the relationship between the Jew and Shabbos, in which Hashem says, I have this great gift, I want to give it to them. There's still something else you're all missing. It's most, I think, the most important part of all of this.
The treasure house?
Treasure house, yes. Where is this gift? What does that mean, Bivez Ginzi? Yeah. Now, I don't know literally what it means. I can't tell you. I don't know. But there's an imagery that Chazal want to tell us. What's the imagery that Chazal are giving us in this line? There's something deep hidden in the treasure house of the Ribono Shel Olam, something unique and something special that's different than anything else. Pesach and Shavuos, there's something in a base ginzi. I have a treasure house, and deep in that I have a special present. I have a special present that I want to give to the Jewish people. Now, with that, I want to look at the entire context. Look at the entire context of this Gemara. Amar Rava Bar Machasi, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri, Amar Rav. Okay, we have our list of Amoraim who are teaching us. Hanosein matana lechavero tzarech lehodil. The Gemara has a halacha. If you give a gift to a friend, you must tell him. You're not permitted to give a gift and leave it so that they come home on Friday and there's a potato kugel and they have no idea where it came from. Even if it has a kosher symbol. I'm just thinking, like, who gave this to me? I don't know. If you give a gift, you're obligated to let the person know. Now, we're leaving aside for now why that is, but that's what the Gemara says. Hanosein matana lechavero tzarecho. What's the source? How do I know that if I give a gift, I'm not supposed to give an anonymous gift, I'm supposed to do it to increase friendship, to increase reyus and love, that they know that I care, that I gave it to them, that just anonymous potato gogo shows up on Friday. That's not the way. This is different than tzedakah, by the way. Tzedakah, if the person receiving the potato gogo otherwise would not have had potato gogo, that's in the category of tzedakah. There, of course, we know there's an element of being besesa, of being quiet and being anonymous, not to embarrass. We're talking about a gift of friendship. What's the value of a gift of friendship if the person doesn't know from whom it came? So there the Gemara says you have to let the person know. The source says, Ladas, ki ani Hashem mekadeshchem. The Pasuk says, you need to know that I am Hashem who sanctified you. So the Gemara says, a drasha, if I need to know that, so then the point is knowing. Gemara says, Tanya Nami of the Brisa that teaches us a similar thing. Ladas, ki ani Hashem mekadeshchem, quoting the same Pasuk. And here we have the line that we started with. Amalo kodesh baruch hu lemoshe. Matana tova yeshli beveiz ginzi. I have a great gift in my treasure house. Ushabis shema. And its name is Shabbos. Vani mevakesh litnali Yisrael. I want to give it to them. Lech vahodiyam. So go tell them. So in the context is when you give a gift, you can't give a gift without the person knowing what they got and where it came from. So in that context, when Hashem says to Moshe, tell them, what's the context? What's the Gemara telling us about Shabbos? There's something about it that we would not otherwise know about it. You need to know that it's deep in the recesses of my treasure house. I want to give it to them. They need to know. Go and let them know what it is. The Gemara says a proof from here. You learn when you give hanose pas latinik. If you give bread to a child, you have to let the mother let them. But the Gemara's time, which I didn't get, they smear some on its mouth, on the child's mouth, so that the mother knows that somebody gave this gift to the child. The Gemara asks, is this really true? Every time you give a gift to a person, you have to let them know? We have an instance, the Gemara asks, of Moshe Rabbeinu. He comes down from Har Sinai. Just read this a week or two or so ago in Shul. Ki keren or panav, u'moshe lo yada. And Moshe didn't know that his face was beaming radiant light. He comes down from Har Sinai, and he didn't know. And all the people were afraid. They couldn't come near him, so he has to put on a mask. But the pasuk says Moshe didn't know that he had this beaming radiant light. So the Gemara says, well, there are two different categories. There's something that's avida legluy, something which will become revealed, it will become known. And Moshe's radiant face was going to become known. He couldn't hide it. The second he comes down, everybody's like, Moshe, I can't see. So it was going to be. So Hashem didn't have to tell Moshe that which was going to become obvious. But if it's not going to become obvious, then it has to be told. You got to let people know. The Gemara says, Shabbos, wouldn't we eventually have found out something about Shabbos? Yes, the Gemara says. But matan tzcharen, the great reward, the great benefit, both to us spiritually and even in this world when we experience, that would not have been known. We would never have known the reward for what Shabbos gives us. And since we would have never known that, Hashem says, it's deep in my treasure house, and they would never know, so let them know. This is what the starting point, this idea, we'll get into the details a little bit later, the reward versus the concept of Shabbos, the whole Gemara, there's a matana here. There's a gift that Hashem recognizes we would not have understood or known, and we need to. It has to be revealed. Go tell them what that is. What I'd like to do, let's start with a hakdama. It's the hakdama of the Mishneh Berurah. The Mishneh Berurah, who of course commented on all of Hilchos Shabbos, is our starting point of our modern day understanding, and that it's already 100 years old. So there's like been, you know, hundreds of books that have been written. Which reminds me, you're all going to receive this gift as for participating in this class. The Kansos Code of Jewish Law, written by Rabbi Appel in a more modern, contemporary form of all the halachas that we know and love. And you will all be receiving this shortly. Hopefully by next week. I don't know exactly when it's coming. So the Mishneh Berurah is the star. Mishneh Berurah is the Mishneh Berurah of Chafetz Chaim. Let's take a look at his hakdama to the laws of Shabbos. It's long. We're not going to go through the whole thing inside. It's lengthy. It's in source number 2. But I want to use that as a starting point for as we try to uncover this gift of Shabbos that needs to be revealed, that needs to be unlocked, as to what is it that that we do. So I figure a good place to be would be the Chafetz Chaim. Let's start with what he has to say. He has 4 main points in his Hakdama. As you can see, labeled Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet in source number 2. We'll just read a little bit of each one as a starting point. Most of these, I believe, you will be familiar in one way or another, maybe not in the way that he presents it, but certainly in its concepts, but it's a good start for us. Number 1, says the Mishnah, starting from the quotes of Pasuk in the first line, that's not underlined, Kisheshes Yamim, Asa Hashem, Hashem HaGarad, we'll see that later. Hashem created heaven and earth, as we know. Huralana, end of the first line in source number 2. Huralanu akasuv bazeh, the Torah teaches us with this, she'inyin Shabbos, hu shoresh ha'emuna. This starting point, that Shabbos is all about the source, the root of emuna, of faith, of belief in the concept of a creator, leida, to know, she'ha'olam hu michudash, that the world was created. V'kevan shebara hakol hu adon ala kol, and since Hashem created the world, He's the master of everything. Va'anachnu avadav, and since He's the Creator, we become His servants. U'michuyavin la'asos ritzono. That's why we have to do what His wish is. U'la'avdo b'chol gufeinu v'nishmoseinu, and to serve Him with all of our souls and all of our bodies. U'mamonu with our money. Ki akol shelo, because everything is His. V'hizhira ha'torah shmiras ha'shabbos yud beis pa'amim. 12 times in throughout Torah. You're going to find the idea of keep my Shabbos, don't forget about my Shabbos, observe my Shabbos. 12 different places we're going to see that. The Omru Chazal, Kol HaMeshamer Es HaShabbos, Ke'ilu Mikayem Kol HaTorah. one of the many statements of Chazal that we'll take a look at as this one. Chazal says anyone who keeps Shabbos is as if he has kept all of Torah. Anyone who does not observe Shabbos is as if he has violated the entirety of Kafar B'chol HaTorah Kula. V'akol mitam anal, everything is for the reason that I wrote, Shehu Shoresh HaEmunah. That's point number one. I think a point which most of us would have assumed. If we would have said, what's the significance of Shabbos? This is what we would have started with, as the Mishnah Berurah, as the Chafetz Chaim starts. What's the significance of Shabbos? What do you mean, what's the significance of Shabbos? Shabbos is the source of all Emunah. It is the source of Hashem being a creator. We are the created, and therefore we have obligations. Let me just pose a question. Does this answer the question of the great gift of what Shabbos is? So to me, no. I'm not saying anything against the Chafetz Chaim. Well, the starting point is, what is the significance of Shabbos? It's the Shoresh HaKol. It is the source of our Emunah. Why is it so important? Because that is the testimony that Hashem created heaven and earth. Let's go to point number two. He has three different points within point number two about its significance. It's always interesting when you read anything and it's like 100 years old already, and you try to get into the mindset of the culture of who the author is writing to. If we were today to write a hakdama, if someone were today to write an introduction to Shabbos, you'll see when you get this and you read this hakdama, it's very different than what we're about to read. In terms of what angle do you take as you introduce such a major body of work? Yes?
The fact that he keeps saying it's a gift. When you give a gift, it doesn't mean the person earned it.
Who keeps saying it's a gift?
Hashem,
you're going back to the first source.
Right.
Correct.
So it's a gift. It's in his treasure house.
Yes.
Like a magician pulls out the rabbit, right? But a gift is not always it is not always earned. It's a gift. You didn't earn it. I'm just giving it to you because I love you.
Okay, so let me take that point and just go back to our first talking about the concept of a gift. We'll just tie up what we expect. What's the difference between saying something is a commandment and something is a gift? Right? The commandment is, like, I'm not interested in your feelings about this. I'm not interested about what you want. Here's the command. I'm the commander. You're the commandee. Go do it.
Right.
When I give you a gift, what is, exactly picking up what you just said, what is the first step in the dynamic of a person giving a gift to somebody else?
I like you.
That's from the receiver's end, from the giver's end. What's better from the receiver's end?
He likes me.
You have to accept a gift. I have a right to say, as I'm sure all of you have done at different points, somebody wants to leave a potato gogle at your house on Friday, they're like, I'm good, I already have. I don't need, no thanks. My life is fine without this gift. How many times have we received gifts that we wish we could have said, like, really, this is not a help to me at all. I don't want, I don't need. All right, so Hashem says, like, shatnez, we don't have a choice. Like, this is the mitzvah, this is what you have to observe. It's a commandment. That's what a commandment is. When Chazal describe it as a gift means there's some element of my receiving this gift. All of this adds to our question of, okay, we need to understand what Shabbos is. So how does the Chafetz Chaim begin his introduction? Yes?
Can I suggest something else?
Sure.
Part of a person giving a gift also, right, is to create a connection
mm-hmm.
with somebody.
Yep.
Right? And I was just thinking, like, when you said that, you know, la das kesh, you can't answer in the Mishnah Shulchan, right? The word das is also, you know, the word create, right? Like, right?
So,
like,
it
also
has
to
do with the fact
that
it
was only given to Bnei Yisrael. So, like, maybe part of Hashem giving the gift of Shabbos is also, like, to create that connection with
Child. Yeah. Child. I mean, we're going to get, yes, we'll, I hope, as we go through, we have all of these concepts. We can really just add them to the list of the connotation of this idea of a gift. But I just want to put it in context again. So, the Mishnah starts with, it's Shoresh HaEmunah, which we would all agree to 100%. There's nothing to talk about that. That's exactly what Shabbos is, that we've all heard before. Does that touch on any of these ideas of a gift, of a dynamic, a relationship, a connection? It's a Shoresh HaEmunah, but that's a separate concept.
Absolutely.
In terms of what?
That is the gift. The Emunah is the gift. When we have complete and utter emunah in Hashem, then life is a gift like that. Because to live a life like that is incredible.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but that's, I don't, that's a beautiful idea. That's a beautiful idea that when I live with emunah, I'm living my life as a gift. But that's like a very esoteric understanding of the word gift, rather than the connotation that it sounds like.
Yeah, might be, sorry, in enabling us to channel our thoughts to be able to have emunah. Or giving you something, a vehicle through which to...
I don't disagree with any of those points. I was like this. Would we not have... Is there something that's a secret deep in Hashem's treasure house that no one would have figured out otherwise? Is there like...
Yes.
I mean, like, in the sense of, like, there's something hidden that needs to be revealed. And I don't disagree with any of your points. And we've all heard many things about Shabbos over the years. We're gonna go through. I want to do this quickly because I see the time is moving by. Here we go. Number two, the Mishnah Berurah describes in section Beis in three different paragraphs the Chomer Ha'avon Sheyesh BeIsur Chilul Shabbos, the severity of violating Shabbos. How bad is that, which he points out, number one, as far as the Arba Misos Beis Din, the four types of actual capital punishment that a Beis Din can administer, which we don't have anymore. But of those four, the most severe, of course, is Skila, is stoning. And which is the punishment for violating Shabbos? That's the one it is, Skila. It's the most severe of all capital punishment. In the second paragraph, he describes the idea that a Mumar, for any one of the, any particular aver, if a Jew violates any particular mitzvah, okay, so they violated a particular mitzvah. But a Jew who bifarhesia over and over again publicly violates Shabbos has a status of an Ovid Kochavim Mamish. It's a status of an idolater. This is in modern, our contemporary times has come up with a lot of, we live in an era of, where non-observant Jews is the majority of Jews, certainly in this country, I think in the world, I think would be a safe assessment. So this comes up all of this as a halacha, but the Mishnah Berurah begins in Radin in Europe with a statement of its severity is such that a non-Shomer Shabbos literally has a status. At the time of the Gemara, that's how they literally treated it. Today's time, we deal with it differently, but in thought, like you're not connected to the Jewish people at all. Like you're a literal idolater if you're a farhesia, publicly not observant of Shabbos. We do, in our own way, certainly identify people as Shomer Shabbos or not Shomer Shabbos. That is the defining status. Shomer Shabbos. If you say a person Shomer Shabbos, it tells me 1,000 other pieces of information. That's all I need to know. Shomer Shabbos. Okay, Shomer Shabbos. That's the severity. The Mishnah Berurah then says one other point. Which he talks about in section Gimel, flipping the page. He has I would say a little bit of a Kabbalistic approach that in the world to come, every one of the mitzvahs that we have, we'll read the first line in Os Gimel, the top of the second. Gam Tzarech Ladas HaRamach Mitzvahs. There are 248 positive mitzvahs that Hashem gave us are neged haramach evarim sheba adam, correspond to the 248 various elements of the human body. And in the same way that the human body has various organs and ligaments and bones and muscles, that some are more important than others. A person can lose a toe or a finger and be otherwise healthy. A person can lose an arm or a leg. As we see, Rachmana Litzlan, Hashem should save all of our soldiers in Eretz Yisrael, but those of us just coming back, it's horrible. But you can live. And then there are evarim, there are elements of the human body that if you don't have, or they're not functioning, you can't live. So it is, says the Mishnah Berurah, in the spiritual world. In the world of the spirit, each one of the 248 positive mitzvahs correspond, so to speak, to an element of the human body. And there are some mitzvahs that if a person doesn't do, so in the world to come, they can survive without it, so to speak. They don't have that particular element, but they're okay. It's a toe, it's a finger. There are other mitzvahs which are more significant. And then there are mitzvahs, keneged harosh, v'halev. There are certain mitzvahs which correspond to the heart, to the head. If you don't have that, you can't, you have nothing. Where is Shabbos, says the Yesod HaEmunah? So that's it. If you don't have Shabbos, how are you going to be brought back in the world to come? With what are you going to exist in the world of the souls? You know, you're missing the Eivor Shanashama Tluya, but you're missing the primary. I don't mean to scare anyone here. I'm just like the way that as we begin Shabbos, again, you're going to find a very different type of introduction in terms of the beauty, its severity, significance, how we view one who violates Shabbos, and what it does, this significant, all of that is in the Mishnah Berurah. Will this explain, this entire introduction, which we ran through rather quickly, will it explain the gift? I think it explains the significance. It explains the idea of Shorash HaEmunah, which we're going to talk a lot about because that is the source. But there's something that Chazal are trying to get at, that if you just read that introduction, you're still missing. But there's something else. There are one other point before we get into our meat and potatoes with the time that we have left. In source three, we find another idea from Chazal pointing out this gift, this depth, this hiddenness of Shabbos. And the Gemara says, Chamisha Echad Mishishin. There are five things that are considered 1 in 60. 1 in 60 is a number that anybody who deals with kitchen shilas with milk and meat and things falling into. 1/60th. That's the measure that it's like there, but we can get rid of it. It's like, nah, it's sort of there, but not really there. If it's less than 1/60th, it's as if it's not there at all. 1/60th is our magic number that Chazal used to describe something that you can just pick up a little bit. More than 1/60th is nothing, just that number. There are five things in the world, the Gemara says, that are that idea. When you experience it, it's 1/60th of something else. What are they? Fire, honey, Shabbos, sleep, and dreams. What are these five things? The Gemara goes through Eish. You want to know what Eish is like? Echad mishishim legehenim. The pain, the fire, the heat of fire, 1/60th of what it's like in Gehenim. Devash, the sweetness of honey, echad mishishim liman. You want to know what mun tasted like in the desert? A little bit of honey, that's 1/60th of what the experience of was like eating mun. Shabbos, our topic. What is it like to experience Shabbos, this great gift of Shabbos? Echad mishishim the Olam Haba. You want to know what Olam Haba is like? You want to know what it's like to be a neshama without a guf? You want to know what it's like to be a soul in the world of the souls? What's that like? I don't know. I can't experience it. I have a body. I don't know what it's like to have a soul without a body. Or maybe he means Olam Haba when we come back at Tchias Hameis. So whatever the Gemara means, what is that going to be like? Experience of Shabbos. Experience of Shabbos, that's what it's like. Echad Mishishim of Olam Haba. Now, parenthetically, one of the questions that we're going to have to address over the course of the next 5 weeks is, what is one of the most primary aspects when you think Shabbos? If you were to describe to a non-Jew or a non-religious Jew and you wanted to explain to them what Shabbos was like, what is one of the most primary things you'll talk about?
Shabbos meal.
Yes. Food. Food. Can you imagine a Shabbos? Can you describe Shabbos without food? Okay.
I mean,
that's what? Can you imagine experiencing Shabbos without food?
Yeah.
That's Yom Kippur. I'm not talking about Yom Kippur. Can you imagine Shabbos without food? The answer is no, because then it's Yom Kippur. We're going to have to address this when the Gemara says that if you were to tell me or ask me, which one is Echad Mishishim Me'olam Haba? Shabbos or Yom Kippur? Which one is the 60th of the taste of the world to come? I think hands down, everybody would have gone with
Shabbos.
No, everyone would have gone with. Okay, maybe. Interesting. I would have said Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur, I'm removed from this world. Yom Kippur, I'm a human, I have a body, but I'm not addressing it today. I'm not addressing any of those needs. No food, no cholent, not worried about anything. I'm a davener. That's all I am. So that's what I would have thought. If there's an experience of the year that gives me 1/60th of a taste of Olam Haba, I would have gone with Yom Kippur. The Gemara goes with cholent, potato kugel, a nap, Kiddush. No, there's no such thing as Kiddush Club. all the things. That's the requirement to eat three times a day. More than Yantav. Yantav is only two. A taste of the world to come. We're going to have to experience why that is. But for our purposes, this treasure, this gift in Hashem's treasure house, He has given us, and it's a taste of the world to come. Part of the Shabbos Miras, Me'ein Olam Haba, comes from this Gemara. The last two, just to finish it up, sleep is Echan Mishishim Lemisa, a 60th of the taste of death is the experience of drifting away to sleep, in which you lose consciousness, so to speak, is a 60th of what the experience of death is. And a dream is a 60th of prophecy. 60th of Nevuah. Okay, our purpose, of course, is how Shabbos is the taste of Olam Haba. One more source on that is in the Otzer Midrashim, in source number 4, Milameda. The Gemara says as follows, Sheve'es Matan Torah, Kargosh Baruch Lishrol V'amalem B'ni, at the time of Kabbalah Satorah, Hashem gathers the Jewish people and He says, my son, my children, Mekach Tov Yesh Li Bo'olam, I have a great purchase, or I don't want to call it a gift because it's a different word of a gift, a great Mekach Tov that I have this world. I want to give it to you, La'ad Li'olam, always, forever, Im Tekablu Es Tayrasi V'Tesh Res Mitzvosi. So they say, the Jewish people say, Meshivim V'Amin L'Fan Ribon Shalom, Eza Mekach Tov Shad Nozim L'Anim V'Mishmar Sa Torah. And again, not the Torah is the gift. I have a great gift if you keep my Torah. So the Jewish people say, what's this great purchase that you're going to give us, so to speak, this great element if we keep your Torah? Third line, Meshiva Kodesh Baruch Hu, and says, Ha'olam Haba. I'm telling you, he says to the Jewish people, I'm giving you this Torah. If you keep it, I have a Mekach Tov, which is often referred to as the Torah itself, but in this context, Olam Haba awaits you. So what's the Jewish response when Hashem promises us Olam Haba for keeping the Torah? What's the Jewish response? We come by all of our idiosyncrasies very honestly. We come by the long history. Meshivin Yisrael v'omrim, Ribbono shel Olam, Hareinu dugma shel Olam. Give me an example. Show it to me. Like, you want me to clean my house for Pesach on a promise of Olam Haba? I need to know what it's like. Show me. Give me an example. In itself, just that's the response of the Jewish people, that the Medrash attribute, that alone is worth the price of admission for today. What's the Ribbono Shel Olam's response? You want an example of what it's going to be like? You want to know, you're telling me it's hard to clean for Pesach, and you want to know, show me the reward, show me that it's worth it, I'll give it to you. Shabbos. I'll give you Shabbos. When you taste Shabbos, the Gemara says, Meshiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Omer Lahem Zeh Shabbos, Shehu Echan Mishishim Shel Olam Haba, Shekulo Shabbos. Because we're going to see that Olam Haba is a Yom Shekulo Shabbos. I'm going to give you Shabbos. And when you experience a Shabbos, you're going to say, oh, I understand, it's worth it to clean for Pesach. I got it, because I just experienced Shabbos. Well, we're going to do Mirtz Hashem. What, I have another 10 minutes now? Yeah. What we're going to do is work through all these psukim of Shabbos, because Chazal see in Shabbos this great gift in Hashem's treasure house. They see a taste of Olam Haba, a taste of why everything we do is worth it, but it's a hidden gift. It has to be revealed. What is revealed is, as the Mishnah Berurah tells us, it's the Shorosh HaEmunah. There's a severity. We know how strong the punishment is. We know that we get. We get its significance, its importance, its source of emunah. But there's something else that Chazal are seeing and trying to convey beyond that I'd like to try to get at.
It's a gift, but it's a gift with strings. Because usually you get a gift and you say thank you and you move on. Here it's a gift with a whole laundry list of things that you have to do.
Meaning how to keep it, how to observe this gift.
So
meaning it's
like a gift-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. As an example, it's a gift. It's as if, using an example without naming a particular instance, where a person donated to a camp new air conditioning units.
But didn't pay for the electricity bill.
So they donated $250,000 of air conditioning units to the camp, and it was like, amazing! until they tried to install it and they needed an entirely new breaker system, maintenance. It was a gift that was nice and cost them $100,000 a year that they then needed to fundraise for forever. Nice. So, yeah, this is a gift with strings attached because Shabbos is not easy. Shabbos is Shabbos. But we'll still see the value of that. Yes?
How come none of them talk about that Shabbos is really a gift of a gift? Meaning Matan Torah was a gift to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning that Shabbos should be the ultimate gift. Gift of gifts, and no one's
going
to focus on
that. Okay, we'll see. It's an interesting point in terms of that particular language. Let's see how far we can get. There are four major. The Mishnah Berurah told us Chofetz Chaim that there are 12 times the Torah tells us about Shabbos. There are most of those are one liners, like thrown into different contexts. Don't forget about my Shabbos. Keep my Shabbos. There are four discussions. Not lengthy, some of them are not so long, but four actual places where the Torah tells us about Shabbos. I'd like to try to figure out on our own, where are they? What is the context? When I went through this, just looking through, I never thought about it. When and how does the Torah introduce us to Shabbos? There are four places where it comes up. Number one, of course, is the easiest, the most obvious. Maase Bereishis, that's the easiest. Seventh day of creation is the first time we come up with Shabbos. On the seventh day, we'll take a look at that. I hope today we'll get started. That's number one. Where is the next place? Where is the next place that the Torah at length introduces the concept of Shabbos?
The man.
Excellent. Where in the man? Excellent. Very, very good. Coming out of Mitzrayim. There's nothing the rest of Sefer Bereishis. Once we have Shabbos Bereishis, we don't find out about Shabbos ever again, really, throughout the story. When the Jews leave Mitzrayim, this is before or after Matan Torah?
Before
Matan Torah, we have, and we'll look at this, Yirtzeh Hashem, next week inside, we have an entire episode in which Hashem instructs Moshe, the man is going to fall twice on Friday, not going to fall on Shabbos, and the Jews experience that, and there's a description of Shabbos. What we're going to do is compare and contrast, as we learn it, how does the Torah describe Shabbos in Bereishis? How is it taught to the Jewish people for the first time in the context of the Man? What's then the third context? Matan Torah. In the Aseres HaDibros, we are going to get another one. So we're going to have Shabbos Bereishis, we're going to have Man, we're going to have the Aseres HaDibros in Sefer Shmos in the beginning, right when the Torah is given. And then the fourth, the Aseres HaDibros, remember, is going to happen twice. I'm keeping that as one. We're going to look at both. We'll see it in Shmos, and then again when it's given the second time in Devarim. There's one other major discussion of Shabbos. The Mishkan. The Mishkan, excellent. The Mishkan, we're also told about it twice. So there are two components of the Mishkan, because it's told to us when Hashem teaches Moshe about the Mishkan, he teaches him Moshe about Shabbos, and then when Moshe teaches the Jewish people about the Mishkan, he also repeats the element of Shabbos. So we get it twice. We're going to get it this week's Parsha of Vayakel. So we're going to get it. So in other words, there are four major places: Bereishis, the Man, then we get the Aseres HaDibros twice, and we're going to get the Mishkan twice. What we're going to do. So four. Those are the major four.
But what about 6, 7, 8, 9,
you said it. Oh, those are just one-liners thrown in different areas. We obviously, if we had a 10-week course, we could do all that. We only have 6 weeks. So we're going to do the four major discussions of Shabbos. We're going to learn them in sign. We're going to learn them with the Psukim, the Rishonim, the Mefarshim, see what comes out of the Psukim, and then overlay on top of that understanding, we'll overlay the way that Chazal paint a picture. Do you want to start? You tell me what you want. I don't know how much of a break you want. Should we start it now or wait till next week of the Psukim? Start it? Okay, let's take a look at it. We'll start. We'll take a look at the Psukim. The first time we come across Shabbos is three Psukim. Very, very well-known Psukim. Let's at least ask all of our questions. Let's start with that. I'm going to read the Psukim. It's in source number 5. One of our four major studies that we'll do. Everybody knows these Psukim, but I want you to read them as best you can as if you're reading them for the first time. Like, what questions would you have? What things would you want to look into and understand more? As you read the English, this was very hard to translate. These psukim are so rich. If you open up an art scroll Rashi, an art scroll Stone Chumash, a Ramban, or a Rav Hirsch, you will not find verbatim translations of these psukim. So what I tried to do, wherever there were various interpretations, I put it in parentheses with all of the options as we take the Hebrew into the English, as you'll see as we read through it. Here we go. Vayechulu ha-shamayim v'ho'aretz v'chol tzivam. By the way, what's the first thing you notice? Where is this? I like to point this out. What parak are we learning? Parak Beis, psukim aleph through gimel. So if you were creating a chapter system for Chumash, where would you end the first chapter, the first parak? Would you end it at the end of day 6, or would you end it at the end of day 7? Where would you put the first parak? Where would you put the end of that? End of day 7, because it's Shiva, Sheshim, Yibreishis, and Shabbos. They go together. It's like one unit. Who created the parak system, labeling prakim? It was the Christians. It was not a Jewish thing. When the Christians printed the Bible, they established what we call Perek Aleph, Perek Beis. We have, Chazal gave us Svarim, Breishis Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim. We have Parshios. We have Aliyos, broken down. There's no such thing in Jewish thought that this is Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet, we don't know Perek Dalet. The Christians created, when they came to the printing press, they needed to divide it, which they did for various reasons. You will find many times discrepancies between the way we would do things and what you find. Like, for example, sometimes an Aliyah ends like one pasuk before or after a new chapter. And every once in a while you're reading like, that's so strange. Why did they make the new chapter one pasuk away from where the Aliyah ends? Shouldn't they have like aligned them up? And the answer is, we would have if we did it, but we didn't. The Christians ran out of space in the printing press. It wasn't computerized, so they ended it there. Or they had a different interpretation of events. This is one of the most classic, that they put the chapter heading of Perek Beis on the 7th day, which we would certainly have included that in the same one thing. Okay, but anyway, I digress. Vayechulu ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz. So thus was heaven and earth, vayechulu. Vayechulu would mean finished or completed, v'chol tzeva'am, and all of its hosts, meaning everything to do with shamayim v'ha-aretz, vayechulu. It was completed or finished. Let's just read all three psukim quickly. Vayechal Elokim bayom hashvi'i, Melachto Asher Asa. What's the most simple translation of Vayichal Elokim Bayom Hashvi'i? Hashem completed when?
On
the seventh day. The most basic translation of Bayom Hashvi'i would be, he completed it on the seventh day. Melachto Asher Asa. All the work which he had done. Vayishbos Bayom Hashvi'i. Mikol Melachto Asher Asan. How would you translate Vayishbos? So that's complicated. I have three options. Vayishbos is he abstained, he ceased, or he rested on the seventh day from all the Melach Asher Asan. Vayivarech Elokim es Yom Hashvi'i Vayikadesh. So Hashem blessed and sanctified the seventh day. Kivo Shavas Mikol Melachto Asher Baro Elokim Lasos, because he ceased, rested, abstained from all the work that he had done. Okay, let's do it like this. I have 2 minutes, literally 2 minutes. There's another shear. 2 minutes. Let's start with this. What are the primary elements that come out of these psukim? And then what other questions would we have? What are the 3 or 4 primary elements that we are taught from these psukim, which we are so familiar with? Okay, creation was completed on the seventh day. That's number one. Vayichulu hashamayim v'ha'aretz. And when was that completed?
On the seventh day.
That's what it sounds like. So the seventh day represents, or was, the completion of all of the work. Okay, that's primary component number one that comes out of the psukim. We actually see it twice. In the first pasuk of Vayichulu Hashemayim, and then in pasuk Beis again, Vayichal Elokim, that he completed Melachto Asher Asa. Okay, what else comes out from these psukim? We're going to see Midrashim. We'll see all about that. I'm just going with the psukim right now. Just going with the psukim. Vayichulu and Vayichal. When did the Vayichal happen? Bayom, that's the most simple translation. What else comes out of these psukim? So number one, he completed. Number two, Vayishbos. Whatever Vayishbos means, whether it means rested, ceased, abstained, whatever it means, Was that by chance or was it purposeful?
Purposeful.
So there was a completion. Sometimes you complete a task and then it's just like, I just finished. And then I completed a task and now I'm going on vacation. Now I'm celebrating. Now I'm reviewing, whatever it is. So there were two things that happened by Yom HaShvi. Number one was a vayichal. There was a completion. Number two, there was a vayishbos. There was a very purposeful resting, ceasing, abstaining, something in a very purposeful manner. And what's the third primary component that comes out of these psukim? Somehow, the seventh day, which was that day in creation, but now it's going to be like, it becomes a thing. And what happened to that seventh day? It was blessed and if I asked, and what, very nice, you repeated the words beautifully, what does it mean to bless the seventh day?
Well, it's something special. This is like the day. It's called. He called it.
How would you distinguish that from sanctifying the seventh day? What's the difference between blessing and sanctifying? Those would be the questions we would have to. Okay, so there's a completion on this day. There was a purposeful stopping, refraining, resting something purposely on the day. And then there was a double language, a blessing and a sanctifying of the day. And what was the reason? If you had to choose of the first two, we said, right? Number one was that he completed. Number two, he stopped, rested purposefully. And if I were to then say, which one of those two is a reason to sanctify and bless? The fact that he completed or the fact that he pulled back and stopped?
Should be completed.
I would have thought, that's what I would have thought. If there was a reason to sanctify and bless, it would be because I completed. So what does the Torah say? What's the reason why vayivarek vayikadesh kivo shavas? Somehow, it was not because of the completion that dictates the sanctity and the blessing, whatever that means, which we don't yet know. It was because he purposely pulled back. That's why he sanctified and... Okay, we have a lot of questions. What's not in here? Just as we can look. What's not in these psukim? Any what? No commandment. No gift. No relationship to the Jewish people. Obviously, we don't exist yet. None of those things... All we have is what we pointed out. Vayichulu, vayishbos, vayikadosh evar. We'll talk about that. I have to finish. No, we'll do more. We'll do more. But you need a little break. The next class is going to start. Next week. Mirtz Hashem, next week. We got a lot to do. So I'll see you all, Mirtz Hashem, next week.